And yes, we are back from our first commercial break, and good timing because our first guest is on the line. He is, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, he's the head of the Sport Ear Racing League. These folks exist. They promote open course air racing for experimental production and vintage military aircraft. That's Mike Thompson. Mike, welcome to All Wheel Live.
Well, thank you very much. Good evening.
Listen, we appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight. So, Mike, real quick, our listeners, you know, have a pretty good understanding when it comes to going fast, you know, on land or even on water, but probably, including Eric and myself, we're certainly not that well versed on, you know, what it's like to hit 200 or 300 miles an hour, you know, up in the air. So I can only assume that it's. I know you guys are very professional at what you do, but it's got to be somewhat of a prerequisite for you guys to be kind of part racer, you know, part astronaut, and part daredevil. Am I close?
Well, part pilot, part navigator. Actually, it's there's a lot of head work involved in the airplane to find your way around the course and make sure you make all the turn points. So the only time it's really that much of a rush is when you're on the downhill side coming into the finish line, and you don't have to worry about finding the next turn point. You can concentrate on just absorbing the pure speed that you hit going downhill with the throttle all the way open and hitting the best speed you can as you cross the finish line.
I tell you what, Mike, this is pretty wild for us to be interviewing somebody who races in the air, because it's just, this is like really, really cool. And I'm going through your classes. You have an experimental class. And how did this whole league come about? And whose brainchild is this league?
Well, I certainly can't claim that it's my brainchild. Cross-country air racing has been happening for decades. I mean, recently this month, there was the Air Race Classic, which is a true cross-country race. And when I say true, I mean a couple of thousand miles from coast to coast, taking up 4 days. And this one was held in July, and it's it used to be called the Powder Puff Derby, but they changed the name, and now it's Air Race Classic. But it's all women, and they fly all different types of aircraft, and they fly from one coast to the other. So this is has been around a long time. Air Venture Cup, the race that kicks off the Oshkosh Convention up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, just ran last weekend, and that was, I believe, its 16th year. So compared to that, we, as a league, we're pretty much a baby league still. We're running on our eighth season now.
Wow. Crazy.
Very nice. Now, you mentioned the race, it was cross-country, 4 days, you know. Is that, you know, can you give us kind of an overview on you know, a typical length of a race? I mean, do they vary?
They do vary, much smaller than that. Our races will vary between 150 or so to 300 or 400 miles. The most time we'll spend in the air is a couple of hours, 2.5 hours, depending on how fast your airplane is, of course. But the intent is for folks to come out and make a day of it, and to come out, and usually we'll fly in Friday evening and spend the night, and then Saturday morning we all meet early and we have a safety briefing. We brief the race course, the turns, the frequencies, and all this. And then we send them out to the line and start them up. And the intent is to have them around the course and back to the airport by lunchtime, when we generally have it goes from a catered to lunch to cooking hamburgers and hot dogs on a grill with the local EAA chapter. And then we hand out awards and we send everyone home. So it's all oriented towards being kind of a day run in the main. There are some that are multi-day events. Even within the league, we have some that are multi-day events. And then in the larger scope of cross-country air racing, as I mentioned, there are some that last much longer.
Very nice. So in essence, you know, each pilot, a racer, they're really racing against the stopwatch and not so much, is there any head-to-head type of racing, or is it all just, you know, stopwatch, you know, how fast you get to point A to point B, or, you know?
There is the intent is there is no head-to-head racing. We carefully start the pilots at 30-second intervals on intervals with the fastest aircraft launching first. So if everything goes well, and if someone doesn't get lost, and if someone doesn't sandbag us when they give us their start time, and they can only do that once, because once they're on record with a time, with a speed, then that's what they get for future races. So the idea is, if all of those things are right, then the distance between aircraft actually gets further and further apart as they go around the course, because the faster aircraft are out front, and everyone's pulling away from the person behind them. But things happen. Someone may miss a turn and have to turn back into the course, and someone may be slower this day than they were before for various reasons. They may have high cylinder head temperatures and have to pull the throttle off a little bit. So by the time they come to the finish line, it's anybody's guess whether we're going to have two airplanes wingtip to wingtip coming down the chute and hit the finish line together, or if everybody's coming in pretty much at that same, maybe not 30 seconds, but at some interval, so that every aircraft is crossing the finish line on their own.
Now, Mike, how did you get started with the Sport Air Racing League? What's your background? Have you always been flying aircraft? I mean, were you prior military?
Yes, prior military, naval aviation, and I had built an RB-6 back in 1998, and for the first few years, just flying it was, I was happy just to do that, and traveling and going places. And then we had one of the folks in this local chapter he also races his aircraft, which is an F1 rocket.
Oh, wow.
And he races that at Reno. So if you get to be going fast enough, the sport class racing at Reno is something that you might aspire to. And several of our racers, having started racing cross country with us and got the feel of their airplane, how their airplane handles at high speed, built up their confidence, made modifications, and made their airplane faster, they continued on. And this year in Reno, I think we'll have about 8 of the folks that have been flying just cross-country with us. They have stepped up and flown the Pylon Racing School back in June, and they qualified, and they'll be at Reno in September. I don't know if they're going to make it through all the heats to be in the final races, but at least they're there making the attempt.
Right. Oh, definitely, and that's what a league needs, is for people to keep on trying to be interested in it, and fresh blood, as they say, is always good for an organization. What kind of attendance do you guys see at your events? I mean, have you seen it rise, or attendance? Can you take us through like a typical race? I mean, is there thousands of people on the ground, or?
Oh no! This is, in fact, we have intentionally. We try to keep these low-key without having the public around, because we do everything on a volunteer basis.
And
once you start having the public come in and attend, then you have to have help with crowd control for safety on the ramp when you go out and start all the aircraft. You have to have facilities in place. They can quickly overwhelm just the terminal and the services that are there just for day-to-day flying at an airport. So we don't intend for these to be really air shows. In fact, there's really, people ask, well, what can we see there? And I say, well, you will see us start up engines and taxi out and take off, and then you won't see anything for 30 or 40 minutes, and then the airplanes will be coming back in singles, or if you're really lucky, maybe a pair at a time, and then we all land. And that's about it. So I get questions from people wanting to come out and see. They get wind of a race, and they come out and say, well, what are we going to see? I say, well, you're not going to see much. Sorry. This is pretty well for the pilots, not for the public.
Right. And the precious four letters there, of course, is race. When people hear that term, it's what, when, where, and who. Now, your sport of racing league, is it packaged like a video to the public, or is there, or are you guys just doing it, like you said, privately, and you're not even, you know, and is there a videographer, you know, doing the events where you can buy a video if you're the public? I mean, is there any way for the public to be involved with your league?
Oh, yes, there is. We actually, we have now on the Sport Air Race, sportairrace.org, and there is a link there for media. And on that link, there are several videos that have been taken, some professionally done, and some just put together by folks who were at the finish line, and then they cobbled it together in Movie Maker or whatever software they had. And
right.
But some of them produce very good videos, and we put the videos up there and link them up. There's several out on YouTube as well.
So Mike, the league is... Go ahead, Eric.
I'm sorry, Patrick. Go ahead.
No, what I was going to ask you is, can you give our listeners kind of a nickel tour of your, you know, I call it race vehicle, but your race plane, a race airplane? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, my particular plane is a Vans RB6. It's an experimental airplane that I built in my garage over a span of about 5 years, and out of the factory and stock in a stock condition, it runs about 180 to 190 miles an hour. There are some airplanes that are built straighter than others, but that's pretty much standard. And then once you start slicking the airplane up using aerodynamics, closing off gaps and making things as smooth as possible, not to mention bulking up the engine. Well, mine now has high compression pistons, and I've got a high-performance exhaust on it. I'm still running a carburetor. I haven't made the jump to an injected system yet, so I actually have some room to grow, and that's also why I'm usually coming in third or fourth in my field, in my class, because there are guys out there who would take this much more seriously, and they have their airplanes going a lot faster in my class. But one thing we have to consider is unlike Reno, where they go out there and they can run 40 inches of boost in those P-51 Mustangs, and they know that if their engine explodes like a hand grenade, which is what they call it, grenading, they've got a runway right beneath them. So all they've got to do is call a mayday, put the gear down, and land. Our situation is we have pilots flying to these races from all over the country. Not only are the races all over the country, from Texas up to Wisconsin, out to Florida, out to Arizona, and then people fly to the races from several states away. So our enthusiasm and our competitive tempers are dampened somewhat by the knowledge that we've got to fly this airplane home, and we don't have a truck down there with a spare engine to put in it to get it home. So... Mm. We are making the best of aerodynamic efficiency with our aircraft, and you would be amazed to know how many races are lost just by the pilotage, by missing a turn, taking a turn sloppy, and losing a lot of speed in the turn, that kind of thing. So there, it's not a pure horsepower kind of game. There are a lot of aspects to it.
So the driver definitely has an influence over the finish. Most racing series. Mike, what type of aircraft have you flown in your career? You said you're Air Force, is that correct?
I was air crew in Navy in P-3s, that's a sub-chaser airplane,
okay.
Four-engine turboprop, and then all manner of civilian aircraft, Pipers and Cessnas and whatnot. Some of my favorites were a Grobe motor glider that I was flying. Mostly while I was building my airplane, I was keeping my hand in by flying the motor glider. And then since my RV has been finished in 2003, frankly, I haven't put my hands on the controls of another airplane.
You love your
when
baby.
When I want to go flying, there's nothing that beats my RV.
What power plant's in that plane? Who makes it?
It's a Lycoming O360, 360 okay. cubic inches, and we think we're making around 220 horsepower with it right now.
What's the weight?
Nice.
I beg your pardon?
What's the weight of the aircraft?
It weighs 1,100. The last time I had it on the scales, it was 1,140 pounds empty. It's got an 1,800-pound gross, but I usually fly it with just me and just enough fuel to get me around the course, plus a safety margin when I get back.
So it's
very
snappy.
So we'll try to keep the aircraft. Sorry?
It's very snappy aircraft then, because you're lightweight. You got about 225 horse. That's a good little...
Airplane
that sounds awesome.
The airplane was built to be a traveler and aerobatic. It has plus 6 and minus 3 G capabilities. So I don't need to worry when I'm out on the course down low on a summer day and the turbulence is beating me up. I know the airplane's going to hang together, and whether I will or not is another question.
right.
Mike, when you build your own aircraft, I mean, do you have to have the airframe certified, I mean, and all that to go legally up in the air? Or what's required to, if one were to build their own aircraft, I mean, I'm sure it's more than grabbing the Craftsman toolbox and building your aircraft, but what's involved?
Well, the first thing that's involved is that a person should do is get active with their local experimental aviation association, EAA, because there's a wealth of knowledge. There's a wealth of knowledge with the EAA and the people there who can help you get that airplane finished. And as far as the inspection, you're pretty much on your own. Now, the EAA does have a program where they have what they call technical inspectors. So you get paired up with a technical inspector, technical counselor in your EAA chapter, and they will make periodic visits to your shop or your hangar, wherever you are, and look over the airplane at whatever stage you're at and say, well, you're doing okay here. Maybe you ought to think about doing this different or something. Of course, they're always available to answer questions. In the end, the aircraft has to be inspected by an FAA examiner, and that usually takes 2 to 3 hours. You have all the inspection ports off the airplane. They get in there with an inspection mirror and a flashlight, and there's no part of that airplane they do not look at. And after they're satisfied that you've built the aircraft correctly, I mean, they're looking at the rivet heads to make sure that you formed rivets that are properly formed, because that imparts strength to the aircraft. You know, as for composite aircraft and wooden aircraft, there are different things they look at, but since mine's aluminum, that's what I'm familiar with. So after they've inspected the aircraft, if it's signed off, they will issue you an airworthiness certificate, and then you have anywhere from 20 to 40 hours that you're required to fly inside an area that is designated by the FAA. Now, that depends on what part of the country you live in. When I fill out the paperwork, it said, what is your test area going to be? I wrote Texas, and he approved it. So
nice.
when I was in my test phase, I was not having to just fly 10 miles in one direction and then turn around and fly 10 miles back. I actually took trips down to the coast, down to Port Aransas, and went up to Dallas. And one of the restrictions is during that time, you cannot carry passengers. So I guess the FAA's figuring is if the airplane's going to fail during that time, then you're the only one that's going to pay the price.
All right.
Well, they certainly put you through the safety rigors, and it's all for the right reasons. And, yeah, you definitely picked the right state to be able to test fly Texas. I mean, well, you can go 1,000 miles and still be in Texas sometimes, you know. So now, Mike, you mentioned, you know, a number of different events in different states and different regions of the country. You know, how long is the season, and how many events, you know, scheduled events do you typically have?
Well, the season runs generally from late March or early April into November. Our last race of the season is always right here in Taylor, Texas, and it's generally the weekend before, 1 week or 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. And, of course, that's encompassing the majority of the good flying weather. And we during that time, we started out in 2007, we had seven races. And this year, we will have 22. So the number of races is growing, and I had a phone call today, actually, from a fellow who wanted to run another race next year. So that part is growing. I would have to say we probably, our participation probably peaked in 2011. 2012, it started dropping off, and it has continued to drop off this year. And I think that is due to the rise in fuel costs, which are in some places $6 a gallon. Mm-hmm. And just the cost of flying cross-country to a race, running the race is a pittance compared to the cost of getting to the race and then getting home. But we'll see. We'll see if the race if the fuel costs come down. What we've done is we've tried to get more local interest so people don't have to fly far to get to the race, and that's worked out at some of our races. So we just keep working on it and try to expose more people to the sport and get them to come out, and we'll keep going.
Yeah, well, you know what, Mike, the economics of racing, certainly, you know, it's affecting all types, whether it's, you know, cars, trucks, boats. Obviously now, you know, obviously we learn a little bit about your sport. So I think, you know, the economy certainly has affected everybody. But listen, Mike, we really, really appreciate you coming on tonight and giving us and our listeners an overview of your sport, Air Racing League. I know you're all over social media. It's sportairrace.org?
Sportairrace.org.
.org. You're also on Twitter at Sport Air Racing is your handle, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're on Facebook, and all those links are on the homepage of the website.
Well, listen, you certainly gave us some great insights, some great education about your sport. And if anybody listening is interested, you know, check out their website, check out Facebook. You know, Mike certainly... He was very easy to get a hold of, and I'm sure he'd be easy to get a hold of anybody that's interested in being part of your league. So,
certainly, there's a contact link on there that says contact us, and that chairman at sportairrace.org email will come to me, and I'll be happy to answer any questions anyone will have.
Awesome, Mike. Once again, appreciate you joining. I'd like to have you on again at some point, and wish you the best on the rest of your season.
Thank you very much. You have a good evening.
You too.
Thanks, Mike. I tell you what, Patrick, it was another interview, and, you know, I got to compare it to Garnett again. You know, Mike Thompson, I didn't know jack squat, and I'll be the first to admit it, about Air Racing, but it sounds like a cool deal. I mean, and it made me want to go out to an air race.
Yeah, we've all kind of been to the air shows, right? Obviously, you were in the airport, so you're very familiar with them, the Blue Angels and such. But this is a different animal. You know, I tell you what, it piqued my interest when I was checking out his website and some of the YouTube clips. But after hearing him, it definitely turned a notch up even more. So I'm interested if you kind of get my drift, you know.
Yeah, I should have, or you or I should have asked him how much he had into his aircraft monetarily wise. Because, you know, this guy built this essentially in his garage, and he's having a hell of a time in the air with it, flying, you know, all over the country. And, I mean, you can't do that with a race car or a motorcycle. I mean, you can drive all over the country, but you're going to pay for it on your you're going to feel it the next day. But, you know, a guy built an aircraft. That's cool, man. Again, there's a, you know, once I ask that media question about the video, I go on the website and there's 50 videos. So visit sportairrace.org for more information on the Sport Air Racing League. And, of course, we thank Mr. Mike Thompson for joining us tonight.